Hi everyone, Matthew here. This episode on US versus UK medical license exams originally aired on our podcast just for medical students and foundation year doctors, what medical school doesn't teach us. For more details, check out medicsmoney.co.uk/MSDTU or check out what medical school doesn't teach us wherever you get your podcasts.
If you are thinking about moving to practice medicine in the United States of America, then today's podcast is for you, as we are joined by a podcast listener who's been through that process of training in this country, going to medical school in this country, and now moving to America. So we've done a few episodes on how to leave the UK. We did episode way back, episode 20, December 2020. We did an episode about it with a friend of mine, Sam, who's in Australia. Episode 36, we had Dr. Carl Kennedy, an anonymous Australian doctor who worked in the UK for a bit, but then returned back. We also did one on moving to Canada, but we've never done one on moving to America. And that's because we don't know much about it, but we're really grateful to today's guest for coming on and sharing their expertise. This is going to be really useful about the reasons why this doctor is leaving the UK. That really resonated with me, and it's pretty clear that we've got big problems in this country. Not news to any of the listeners in this podcast, I hope, but this is going to be a super useful episode. The guest was also kind enough to give out his Twitter details, so if you want to follow him on Twitter and follow his journey, and he's offered to come and do a follow-up episode when he actually makes the move in a few months' time. So that will be super interesting. If you're watching on YouTube, you can drop your questions and comments down below. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. New podcasts coming out every Tuesday. It takes a lot of work to produce these podcasts for you. And we would love it if you could subscribe, because that helps us to reach more and more doctors so that more and more doctors can be empowered to make better financial decisions. Thanks very much for listening or watching if you're on YouTube.
The Medics Money podcast helps doctors, dentists, and other professionals make better financial decisions. Hosted by myself, Dr. Tommy Perkins, a GP.
And by me, Dr. Ed Cantelow, a GP, but also a chartered accountant and chartered tax advisor.
This podcast is for general information only and does not constitute any form of advice, and tax allowances and rates are subject to change.
So it's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast today, Dr. Nawaz Safdar, and we are talking about your journey with the USMLE, which I know loads of people are going to be into. But Nawaz, can you just give us a bit of a background about who you are, what you've been doing, and how did you get to come on the podcast? Because I'm so grateful for you coming on and sharing your expertise on this.
Excellent. Thank you, Tommy, for inviting me on, really. And I'm really excited to be here. So, yeah, my name is Nawaz Safdar, and I'm an FY1 working in Leeds at the moment, having graduated from the University of Leeds. Prior to that, really, I grew up in Abu Dhabi over in the United Arab Emirates. And we had a very kind of different healthcare system in the UAE compared to what the NHS is. And this was quite foreign to me, to be honest. But once I got into med school, I started to understand the NHS and really started to love the way the healthcare really ran in this country. It was refreshing to see that at the point of care, there was no financial transaction. And those from low socioeconomic backgrounds were still able to access care without having to pay significant amounts of money. Now, when the pandemic kind of hit, I was still in the second year of med school and all the teaching, unfortunately, got cancelled. And I think I wasted too long trying to book my flights and found myself stuck in Leeds. And in hindsight, this was really a blessing in disguise. The USMLE was something I'd always thought about prior to medical school. And now I had months of uncertainty, really. So I was like, you know what, let's give this a go.
Awesome. Okay. For those that don't know, what is the USMLE and how did you get the idea?
Yeah, so the USMLE, or in long, the United States Medical Licensing Exam, is a series of examinations that medical students in the United States have to complete in order to practice as doctors. Colloquially, they are referred to as the STEPS, and I can talk through each of the STEP exams. So step one represents this 8-hour long preclinical examination, which is something similar to what we might have in the UK in perhaps the second or third year of medical school, where you've gone through the basics and you're being tested on things such as the Krebs cycle.
The important things like the Krebs cycle that we use in day-to-day practice, right?
Of course, mate.
Yeah, there'll be a few clinical biochemists who are screaming at their podcast right now, but most of us We don't use the Krebs cycle on a daily basis. Last time I saw the Krebs cycle was probably at med school, just being honest.
Speak for yourself, Tommy, because I use it every single day. No, but yeah, so they test you on seemingly unnecessary knowledge in clinical practice. But in hindsight, I do see the importance of some of it, and I'll get into that in a moment. Going back to this step one, up until recently, it had a numerical score attached to it with a maximum theoretical score of 300, which no one gets, as close as you can get to the 300, really. But recently, this has been converted to a pass or fail examination. And this was in an attempt to reduce kind of medical student burnout, because this exam was primarily used in applications. So if you had a bad step one score, often you were unable to apply to specialties, certain specialties like dermatology, orthopedic surgery, that kind of thing. Moving on to step two, this is a 9-hour examination. They do love these long exams. And this kind of tests you on the clinical knowledge, which is similar to med school finals in the UK. And this is also out of 300. And this is now the primarily used like differentiating exam. Because obviously, if you're going to make one pass or fail, the goalpost is just going to move to a different examination.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So step one, preclinical Krebs cycle, pass or fail now. Step two out of 300, long exams. What next?
Yeah, once you've gone through step one and step two, you've done the examination bits of it, but the application understandably has other aspects to it. Things they look for are electives in the US where you've experienced their system, understand how it works. Other things such as research, volunteering, teaching experience. Just really, they want to see that you're a well-rounded individual when you apply. And funnily enough, they used to have this OSCE examination, which got discontinued because of COVID, and they had a massive backlog of people who were unable to test. So that now they've moved on to this English exam you have to do, which is commonly used in the UK for IMGs who are trying to work in the UK. So we have to do that as well. And we have to prove to them that we can communicate in English, which I find funny coming from England, which is where English comes from. But hey, that's how these things are.
They're Americans, aren't they? So they probably think that they invented English as well.
They do think that, yeah. You'd be right.
That's alienated art. We do have some American listeners. I just started to say hi to our American listeners and probably bye. But anyway, okay, so you got the... So that's step three. Was there five steps, did you say?
No, so there's three steps. Step one, which is the preclinical one. Step two, the clinical knowledge. And then you have the OET, which is the English exam. But this doesn't officially count as a step. You do have a step three, which is a 16-hour examination spread over 2 days. And you can commonly do this after you've started training. So you don't have to have done it before you apply to residency in the US.
Okay, cool. And then that's it. Then you can apply for residency. Should we just go for what? Because you know what that is. I've got a vague idea about it. But like how, because residency, what does that mean?
Yeah, residency is, I suppose, similar to specialty training that we have over in the UK, but it also has some like foundation training mixed into it. So commonly, the one I'm interested in is internal medicine residency, which is similar to IMT, where the first year is kind of like FY1, but not really. You do have more responsibility as an intern, is what they call it. And you go into your second and third year of internal medicine training, where you go from being an FY1 to probably like an IMT2 or so. And then in your final year, you're a reg, really. And you're basically running the whole service with attendings who are basically consultants there for support if you need them.
Okay, awesome overview of how the American system works for those that don't know. Okay, you said that you grew up in the UAE and then you like loved how the NHS worked. I love working in a system where in theory, your clinical need determines what you get rather than your ability to pay. I said in theory because there are big restrictions in the service that we can offer in the NHS right now. Just being honest, like everybody knows it, that it's not. We're not offering the service that we would want, in my opinion. So what changed?
This almost feels like a why medicine question to me, to be honest. So I guess let's start at the start. So when I was initially looking into doing the exams, I realized that it was probably going to be the most intellectually challenging thing that I might end up doing for a while. So my thought process really was that at the very least, if I didn't end up going, I would have learned all of this medicine, which would have made medical school exams extremely easy and also would have resulted in me being a better doctor, because I didn't see myself working as hard in medical school without the USMLE. And at the very most, I would have got a good score on my exams and things would have lined up for me and I would have got into a competitive program in the US. And once I'd had this in front of me, it was really straightforward to then make the choice. And then moving on to the next bit, you can really discuss the push and pull factors. So in terms of pull factors, the kind of main things for me really were the shorter training pathway. And as I just explained, internal medicine is just 3 years. You don't have to do a foundation program. You don't have to take F3s and F4s. And that was something that really appealed to me personally. Something else was the quality of training. And I think this is the main point for me because they have a strong emphasis on knowledge and skills training. A lot of programs will specifically have, you know, weeks where they're just teaching you how to do like lumbar punctures and midline insertions. And in the current NHS, in the IMT training, we all know that it's very kind of service provision heavy, and we don't get a chance to do that. Kind of other points really are autonomy in choosing programs. So over here, we have a national pathway where we apply to internal medicine training and we can preference regions. Whereas in the US, you apply to specific programs. Like, for example, I've applied to 125 jobs in the US, and you can pick jobs based on what a specific job has to offer. A specific job might say that we offer you 4 weeks of LP instruction. We have inpatient weeks followed by outpatient care where you can get continuity of care, which is important to me, that kind of thing. I can keep talking about this, but in summary, that's kind of it. And finally, you have the big elephant in the room, which is really pay. And we all know that pay in the US is significantly greater than what we would receive here. And there's a lot going on around that. So I'll probably leave it at that. And okay, yeah. So going back to the push factors, recently there's been a big discussion in the UK with retention. And again, pay is one of those factors. And personally, after having worked in the system and having seen how FY1s are and observing even the senior staff and comparing that to what I saw in my electives in the US, I realized that this isn't something that appeals to me, whereas the system they have there is something I would want to work in. Further things such as the large bottleneck to get into specialty training in the UK and the numerous boxes you have to tick just for the sake of points just doesn't really appeal to me. And finally, in terms of a kind of smaller point, I just feel like maybe the doctor profession in the UK has lost a bit of respect. And often in the wards, it just feels like I'm not valued enough by the MDT. And if I wasn't there, they probably wouldn't care. And this was something I noticed that in the US, they seem to value their doctors and really appreciate their input. So again, another push factor for me.
That is just really well explained. Really great summary of the issues that we are facing in this country at the moment, in my opinion. So that was awesome. And you mentioned something there that this is not based on what you think or what you believe. It's based on actual going there for your elective, right? So you went to the States on your elective.
Yes, that's correct. So I think an important part of the application for the US programs is to really see that as a foreign medical graduate, you understand their system and you know what you're signing up for. Fortunately for me, because the US and the UK have a similar kind of clinical setup. So in terms of the financial aspects, it's very different, obviously. But in terms of how the service is run, it's very similar. You have ward rounds and a big focus on kind of social care and the MDT and sorting out those issues for people. So in those terms, it was just good to see that the systems are similar. But a lot of foreign medical graduates do come from different countries. American programs do appreciate that things will be different. So they just want to see that you're aware of problems in each of the different kind of services and whether you can adapt to them when you finally do go.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I love that. Yeah, the financial side of things as well. A lot of doctors in the UK would not have any understanding of, do you have the basic pay scales of how that would be for you in the States, or just so we can get like a comparison?
I'd be quoting numbers off the top of my head, but from my understanding, I think the median pay for, so you have different levels of pay there. So depending on what specialty you do and is it procedure heavy, you might make more money. So in specialties such as cardiology, where you do a lot of procedures, orthopedic surgery, neurosurgery, you can expect larger pay scales. I think some of these specialties have median pays of $500,000, $600,000 US dollars. the data is online for anyone to find, really. Whereas if you look at specialties with fewer procedures, so internal medicine, pediatrics, GP, which is known as family medicine over there, pay is considerably smaller, but median salaries is still upwards of $200,000. It is financially better than the UK, even as a consultant. And I think the main thing to remember is because your training ends much sooner, you're on the attending / consultant paycheck much sooner than you would be in the UK.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You're not doing all of those years, lower paid years. You're just getting, that's a great point that I hadn't actually considered until you mentioned it. There must be some downsides. Any downsides to make us feel better for those of us that are staying put in this country?
There are always pros and cons, really. So in the US, I think the working hours is something that most people seem to look at and go, you know what, that's probably not for me. As a first year resident, you know, you might be working 70, 80 hour weeks and you're just working 70, 80 hour weeks nonstop. Whereas in our system, you might be unlucky and have a 70 hour week in your 4 month block. But then you might never see that again. Kind of other things to consider would be visa issues, and you have to go there on specific visas, and they have rules where if you complete your training, you have to come back to the UK for 2 years before you can practice in the US. So that's a particular visa you can have. There's a different visa you can get where that isn't the case, but that's much more difficult to get. And obviously it's the exams, right? Step one, 8 hours. Step two, 9 hours. Step three, 16 hours. Probably the most intense examinations you'll ever do. And they're not cheap. This whole process can be quite expensive, from the kind of first exam all the way to finally making it into residency. Could cost you upwards of £10,000. And I appreciate that. I've been very privileged for me to be able to have been able to afford that. And a lot of people might not be able to afford that. So I guess that's a big barrier.
Yeah. And with the exams, do you have any kind of feeling of like where the level is compared to exams in this country? Is it harder, easier, about the same? Where do you think the level is?
I can only speak for the University of Leeds, really, since that's where I went. And I would say that you can't even compare them. The level of examination for the USMLE was much above par what we'd expect in the UK. And it was almost like once I'd done the exams, the rest of the year for me was, and I didn't find myself revising whatsoever, even though I'd learned different guidelines for the US. I think most importantly, the exam teaches you how to think medically. So often I find myself in clinical situations where I don't know what the answer is, but I can almost work backwards and figure out things. And yeah, real life is different to multiple choice questions, but it does give you the ability to think, really, which UK medics do develop. But I guess it happens when you're prepping for MICGP, MICS, MICP, which is where the USMLE almost stands, really, in terms of the complexity.
Yeah. Okay. That's super interesting. Okay. Somebody's listening to this. They're liking the sound of it. You are ahead of the game because you've done it. Getting started is the hardest part. Where do you even start if you are interested in doing this?
Okay. So I guess if you look at the entire picture, it can be quite overwhelming. And the advice I give people really is to look at it in terms of steps. And I think the exams are aptly named. So one step at a time, really. And you want to decide whether A, you would be interested in going, and B, whether you can financially afford to do. And I think once you've answered those two questions, I would definitely just start prepping for the exams. There's loads of resources online on Reddit on how to go about doing it. There's thousands of people who do it every year. You can use question banks, you can use videos, you can use Key if that's something you use. And really, you just have to stick your foot in there and get started. And once you start doing it, you realize that it is possible. And my experience with the exam has been, it's not really about how intelligent you are. It's more about how much work you want to put into it. You almost see like a linear relationship with the amount of work you've done and, you know, where your score ends up being. And it helps knowing how you want to take the whole application on. So have your exam lined up, have some experience lined up, get your research done, and make some sacrifices along the way. I know it's really tempting to go out on the Fridays and meet your friends, but I suppose it's where your priorities lie, and I have made some sacrifices for it.
Yeah, I like that. Wise words. Would you say do it during med school and then leave immediately, or do F1 so you can at least get through that provisional registration stage? What's your thoughts on timing?
Yeah, again, this is very contentious, and you can actually leave after med school. So you could have your application ready, apply in the September of your final year, and start residency in the July of the kind of coming subsequent year, really. The only challenge with that is often UK med schools finish around the June, July mark. And before you begin residency, you need to have like your med school diploma. So that's a challenge in trying to ensure that you have your diploma in time for you to begin your job. So I would personally email the university, email the relevant program that you're applying to, and just have things set in place so you know what's going on. Commonly, what people end up doing is they'll complete F1, they'll complete F2, they might take an F3 year to prep for the exams and then go across, which is okay. One of the challenges with that is often programs look at how long you've been out of med school, and they prefer you to have been fresh out of med school. If you apply straight after med school or while you're doing F1, it's favorable for them. Whereas if you're waiting for 3 years, that can be a disadvantage to your application. Personally, I'm applying this year now. So I've started F1. I plan on hopefully matching in March. And if I do, I'll probably end up quitting F1. And that means I don't get provisional GMC registration. And actually, you can work in the US without having that. And you can actually come back to the UK as well. But I would personally get in touch with the GMC and know exactly what they expect of you before you make that choice.
Amazing. Okay. Now, as that was so helpful, really appreciate you coming on here, sharing your expertise with us today. If you could wind the clock back, and I think you covered this earlier with your description of the push and pull factors, which definitely is resonating with a lot of people right now. But what could the NHS do to retain you, basically?
Yeah, I think this is, again, a very difficult question to answer. But really, if there's a factor pulling me to the US, if I was to apply that to the NHS, I think it might. So in my experience, a lot of the training here ends up being service provision, and personally, I think it's way too long for some specialties. And if they were to make it more concise and really focus on getting you up to speed with what you're interested in, I think that might help in keeping me. Another point is I feel like there's too many rounds of application. For example, you apply to foundation training, then you're often applying to core training, then you're applying to specialty training. And I don't know about you, but just having that kind of weight on my shoulders constantly, knowing that I need to be doing X, Y, and Z for my CV, or I'll fall behind the curve and then not have enough on my portfolio to make it into specialty training, is extremely draining. Whereas if I go to the US, once I'm in, if that makes any sense. And finally, I guess it's just the pay restoration and the funding. And I guess that's really easy to say from my perspective. And there's a much bigger issue there. If these things were improved, then I feel like definitely they could retain more people in the system. That would help. And I think finally, for me, I like how the specific application to each program works, because then the program decides, as opposed to this kind of national pathway where you end up in a place that might not suit your training requirements. A conversation I had with a registrar recently highlighted just that. They seemed to think that while the training was okay, it just felt like they were treated as just a number in the system, as opposed to the training caring about their specific needs and how they could be streamlined, which I think American programs do better. So then you come out of residency having worked on all your strengths and some of your weaknesses to make you the best version of you, as opposed to the best version of a system, is what we're trying to push out in the NHS.
Yeah, I think you just explained it so well. This is going to resonate with so many people. And when you said like you apply to specific training programs and not the rotational training that we have over here, that was a big factor for me quitting anaesthetics training, because I was just randomly every 6 months being spread to a different part of the country. And although I chose the region, there's a huge region, and I'd be like driving home from a night shift, sleeping in the back of my car, and then going there again because it was such a long commute. And I just thought, what am I doing? What has happened? And then I had a wife and things like that, and it just wasn't conducive to that. Yeah, wow. That was so good, Nawaz. Thank you so much for doing this. This is your first podcast. You absolutely smashed it. Feel free to say no, because we have got quite a few people listening, about 40 to 50,000 people a month listen to this podcast. Wow. I didn't tell you that at the start because I didn't want to, but you look like you can handle pressure. Are you going to say like where people can contact you? Because I found you on Twitter, right? Is that a good place and to get in there? Or?
Yeah. I think Twitter would be a good place for me. I would give out my email, but I feel like it's already flooded with all kinds of things on there. So I think, yeah, if you did want to reach out to me, find me on Twitter, drop me. I've had lots of interest from that post, actually, where you picked me up. So I'm happy to help people out. We have WhatsApp groups with people who are interested in the USMLE, and there's loads of resources out there. And the thing really that I'm trying to do is have a kind of streamlined process in the UK for people interested in applying to the States, so that when they realize they want to do it, they don't find themselves without any information, which is how I found myself, because it's not well talked about. There's no information in the med schools. And I feel like you should be offered the opportunity to leave if you would like to do, if you're interested, do reach out.
Absolutely love it. Thank you so much for your time. That was a total pleasure. I learned loads from that as well. I'm probably slightly regretting doing the USMLE, not doing it 15 years ago, but I'm probably a bit old now. I'm sticking here. But yeah, great work. And best of luck with what you're doing. Stepping outside the box like this and saying you want something different and you're not going to follow the herd, it takes a lot of guts and it's not easy, and you're doing it. So fair play for that. And I hope that your Twitter DMs don't explode as a result of this, but I reckon that they are going to, because yeah, wow. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you, Tommy. Thanks for having me. And yeah, good luck with everything, I guess.
Cheers.